One of the things that I think is that people will appreciate as you about your book, Trust Agents, Chris, is, as you said, it's not, you try to stay away from the tools, and a lot of it is about personal communication and how that happens. And in fact, I just happen to know, having a graduate degree in communication, know about communication theory. And so I had to look back. I'm like, boy, this trust agents, I know this originates from someplace. And actually it was started, they called it something different. They call it two-step flow communication. And in the 1930s, they started studying this. I mean, same thing, obviously there's not an internet, but a personal communication in which there was a opinion leader, and the opinion leader disseminated information, and he became an opinion leader, or she, based on their trust. So could you talk a bit more about the personal and how personal communication happens on the web, which I think can be an oxymoron?
Well, you know, you would think so, and yet, wow, there's so much to go into here, Bill. And thank you for explaining that, because I'm a little quiet and dumbfounded just thinking about the 1930s reference, and partly because the other thing that we tend to get when people talk to us about trust agents, Julian or I, is they'll say, you know, this is a little bit like a new version of Dale Carnegie. And it's sometimes they say it somewhat sneeringly, like there's nothing new under the sun. And I don't remember who said it. It might well have been Mark Twain, because everyone credits him if they don't know who said something. is that, you know, one of the best sellers ever is common sense, because no one ever does it. So, you know, Trust Agents is, in our mind, a book of common sense for a new era. So, interesting point. The idea of credibility and trust and personal communications, it's exactly that. I mean, blogging is a much more personal style communications format than, say, article writing for magazines. And we've already seen that, you know, the magazine industry in general is down about 89% in revenue and all that. And there, people are getting laid off, like they're going out of business. And at the same time, the remaining journalists are being told you must blog as well as write your feature articles. And the reason is we're connecting with that sort of personal feeling, one-on-one feeling communications. I was on Dr. Phil's show as their expert person to talk about whether or not you can build relationships over the web or what these things feel like and all that. And one of the questions Phil threw at me, which was way off the map of where he said he was going to go, is Dr. Phil asked me, you know, well, can you feel emotions over the internet? Can you really actually start relationships over the internet? And I said, gosh, I hope so. I met my wife that way.
Wow.
And he said, well, yeah, but you eventually met her in person. And again, I said, I hope so. I have two kids that I know of. So I think that you can feel emotions over the web. And I think that's one of the things that people who aren't as privy to that or who aren't feeling that yet don't get, is that sometimes they can be hurtful, or sometimes they can not take people's emotions or feelings into account, because there's that digital divide. And yet it's every bit as much as real. I mean, if you think about it, we're doing a telephone interview, and 100 years ago, we would have said that was terrible. How could we possibly talk over, you know, wires when we should be face-to-face at a gathering? But the personal thing, the way I describe it to business is, I said, if you think of advertising and marketing and your other business communications as theater, then look at this as theater in the round. And you still have some privacy. You still have things that you don't necessarily want to share. You still may or may not follow some idea of a guided conversation. But you do have to have more dimension to what you're doing, and you do have to have more conversational openers instead of just a one-way street.
I think, it's a sort of a follow-up question. I'm not sure if it's changing, but for a while there seemed to be quote-unquote flame wars, and it seems that people, myself included, say things over email that I would never say to a person to their face, in which there seems to be that remoteness that in which a harshness creeps into occasionally, hopefully it's less and less, my communication with some people. And I think maybe what happens when a trust agent, I'm sure they get that communication back from, you know, like somebody from Comcast, maybe Frank, and a really ticked off customer, and that remoteness, I think negatively, it can negatively affect that communication. How does a trust agent sort of overcome that?
So, I mean, with negatives, there's always two ways to, and we write about trolls and trust agents, there's always two ways to classify somebody. Somebody might be very angry for very good reasons, and there can be some way to talk them back down off a ledge. And that's really the goal in customer service, is to separate those people from those who are just forever going to be angry at, or just using this as a platform opportunity to take swings. And separating those two is a really difficult challenge, and sometimes we misclassify people who are very frustrated and hurt as trolls, and really what they're doing is just voicing their concerns and voicing their opinion. The language of the web and some of the way we use the web, to your point, Bill, is that sometimes we say stuff that, you know, in the digital format that we can never say in person. Mm-hmm. And I think that, one, that's unfortunate, but two, I think that we have to sort of temper our responses that way. We have to realize that sometimes we're getting someone's inner demons a little bit in textual or otherwise format when there's that distance of transmission, so to speak. The way that most of the companies are handling this is that they're deciding to try to take most of their customer service back and forth offline for a couple reasons. One is that they don't necessarily want everybody's dirty laundry right there on the web. One interesting side effect of that is that they don't really want the consumer or the particular customer to accidentally be caught looking stupid. For example, if you're raging and wailing that somebody has lost your luggage, which seems to have happened to me 3 times in the last 4 days for the first time in years of travel, this very last time the woman said to me, "Your bag's out there." And I was just about to go crazy because, again, I'd lost my luggage a bunch of times on this trip to Europe. Now, had I done all of that on the web, you know, the airline would have been a little frustrated. They would have had to try to help me deal with my problem. But they also would have, you know, quite quickly made me look pretty stupid by saying, "No, your bag's just right over there." And, you know, then it would be there in Google forever. there's a book called Tactical Transparency written by John Havens and Shel Holtz. That's a really must-have book if you're going to consider using the social web to do things like customer service or business interaction. And so I really highly recommend it to your audience.
Oh, yeah, you want
to. We're talking to Chris Brogan, who is co-author with Julian Smith of Trust Agents. And I had one follow-up question, one final question, Chris, and that was the story of Gary Vaynerchuk, who you mentioned a few times in the book. I think he's an interesting case, and I'm wondering if, he's a troubling case for me, because in one part of the book you're talking about trust agents and how it's more than like making the sale, and then on the other hand you have the case of Gary, and who is he's got a very aggressive, maybe, or hyper energized personality or persona. I don't even know if it's a personality, it's a persona. Could you talk about Gary and how he either fits the mold or doesn't of a traditional, as you would lay it out, a traditional trust agent?
Wow, how well said. Bill, Gary Vaynerchuk is a unique individual in several ways, and not the least of which is that I think he very much gets a strange buy from us, so to speak, a strange sort of pass in some of what we've considered and laid out in the book. And when I say that, I think that Gary Vaynerchuk's model for building his relationships was very much like a trust agent. He did a lot of work to make friends with people in the video community, in the wine community, etc.
And say who he is.
Sorry, yeah, that's a really good point. Gary Vaynerchuk is the one of the leaders of the wine library company. I don't remember his actual real title there. It might be like chief operating officer or whatever, but Wine Library is an organization out of New Jersey that sells liquors and primarily wine. And Gary was in charge of marketing and decided that his traditional marketing wasn't really working, so he decided to make a video TV show for the internet called Wine Library TV. And in very short notice, we found that people really loved Gary's approach on wine, because instead of saying, you know, something had a certain bouquet or an aroma or something, he'd say, this tastes a bit like Skittles, or this tastes like cherries and dirt, and we'd sort of immediately get what he meant. And if he didn't like a wine, he'd say it. He would just be very, oof, no, not good. And he used strange terms. He talked a lot in almost football-style terms. He's a very passionate New York Jets fan, and if you ask him every single day of the week what his real goal is in life, it's to buy the Jets. He's very immediately passionate. He's the only wine salesperson I know in the world that also has a Hollywood agent. He's appeared several times on Conan O'Brien and places like Ellen DeGeneres. And the way that Gary Vaynerchuk got his audience was doing everything a trust agent would do. He built relationships. He asked them a lot of questions. He was all the places that anybody was in these kind of video spots and all that. And I think, Bill, where you're getting at with your question about Gary is, nowadays he seems pretty heavily intent on pushing his products, selling his things, getting us to buy. Mm-hmm. And he's fairly shameless about it. He's fairly shameless that if you're part of that cult that wants to follow Gary, that then you're buying into him selling to you the whole time. And in that way, he's being very genuine to his style and to his type. And he's very much an acquired taste. I like the boy a lot. I think he's wonderful. I think there are times where it feels a little bit overburdened. I feel, you know, sometimes everybody feels just a little sold to. But I think that, you know, I think that's part of who Gary is, and he's very unapologetic about it. So, as I said, I think he gets a bit of a buy because we get that sense that this is just how he's laying it out, and we've been invited to accept it or not.